All right, fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, ready to roll and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. I started telling you how to operate the blue box, so I'll just pick up from there.
Yeah.
There are two switches on it.
Yep.
The one on the left is the range switch, and that allocates the RAM, and it's 4K of RAM, to either 6,000 or 2,000.
Okay.
6,000 mode, it operates in conjunction with basic, and it can either be used as additional string locations or machine code programs that can be called from basic, or any combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
When you put it in the 2K mode, it acts as a cassette. It displaces whatever cassette is plugged in, if any is plugged in. It sort of disables whatever's plugged in there, and it becomes a cassette.
Uh-huh.
So in that mode, it will only operate the machine code perfect.
Yeah, sure.
Now, we can copy existing cassettes into the extra 4K. The largest cassette right now is 4K.
Mm-hmm.
There are several of them like that. Basically, it's one of them.
Yeah.
We can copy the cassettes into the memory. We can then modify them, you know, in case we want 280 Zap to have a different car hood or something.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And save them on tape. And then when you go to run them, you put, you load them at 6K, and then you put the switch to 2K to run it.
Uh-huh. How do you copy the tape?
Okay. Use the utility for that. And I've got a short, about a 25-step program, machine code program that I'll give you over the phone here.
Okay.
And a procedure for copying a cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What you do is you put the switch in the 6K position.
Yeah.
Make sure you can write into RAM, and I'll get into that in a minute. That's the mode switch. But assuming it's you can write into it. You enter the following program, and you start this at 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
The memory actually goes a little bit beyond 6,000. It goes, starts at 6,000 and goes on up to 6FFF. And then there's another 128 bytes that start at 7,000.
Okay.
This little routine, what it functionally does is it goes into a loop waiting for you to push a key on the keyboard, and after you push the key, it copies whatever is at 2,000 up into 6,000.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So, functionally what you do is you enter this program in, start it up, take the basic cassette out, and put in the cassette you want to copy. And then you push that button on the keyboard and it makes a copy of it. And then you put the base, then you set the, put the mode switch to ROM so you won't get clobbered accidentally. Then you put the basic cartridge back in and load the utility program.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the, programs I sent you.
Yep.
And there is a facility on that to dump whatever's in the RAM onto tape.
Hmm.
You have a tape copy.
Send them again.
So let me give you the program, and then if you want to test it, you can sort of step it through it if you are set up to try it. Otherwise, try it some other time. Okay, starting at 7,000, DB, Dog Baker.
Mm-hmm.
1-4. These come in two pairs.
Right.
Baker 7, 2-8, Fox Baker, 2-1, 0-0, 2-0, 1-1, 0-0, 6-0, 0-1, 0-0. 1-0. Echo Dog. Baker 0. Charlie 3. 0-0. I'm a calling. Ampersand. No, actually, it'd be better to do this the other way around. What you have to do with this ampersand? 14 equals 0 to disable the interrupt routine. Because after you pop the basic cartridge out, if the interrupt, you have to have interrupt disabled or else it'll bomb when it tries to call a basic cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
In response to the interrupt. So, use an ampersand 14 equals 0. Segment, so you just push R. But before you push R, start your tape loop.
Yeah.
After you've copied the program up there and have got the utility back in, before you dump it, you can always switch the mode switch back into RAM position and modify anything you want to modify before you dump it.
You mean instead of ROM? Okay.
Okay. While we're on that subject, the mode switch.
Mm-hmm.
Your switch, the switch that came in the one I sent you, does not have a center off position. There's no
right.
You can sort of manipulate it and get it to stay in the center.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no detent. I was not able to get a switch in time.
Yeah, I just did.
Had a
okay. Yeah, I can put it, it'll sort of...
If you put it in there, it'll be in a RAM position. That means you can guarantee to be able to write into it.
Oh, I see.
In the ROM position, you cannot write into it. You can only read from it. And that protects it from it inadvertently being clobbered by a basic programmer. You know, when the screen goes wild, sometimes that.
Yeah.
In the auto position, where it would normally reside. Under program control, you can either make it RAM or ROM. The way you do that is you use two pseudo ports. The ampersand parentheses 64 equals anything, make it equal zero. And that'll put it in the ROM mode, which is in auto. You execute an ampersand.
That's what I was fooling with, so.
Port addresses and everything are the same.
Yeah.
In fact, I tried to make port B be exactly the same pinout so that you can use your old test document.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
You'll be able to use it. Now, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to use the tilt switch because it's, you know, without opening it up and bending it down.
Oh, yeah, well, that's okay.
You know, it's the socket is in a different attitude.
Yeah, right.
But,
minor. Yeah, that is sort of tight.
But on the bottom row, looking from the back of the valley.
Okay.
The bottom row.
The port A.
Port A.
Mm-hmm.
That's ground on the end, then 7 through 0, port A,
mm-hmm.
plus 5 volts.
Yeah.
Then the deity clock comes out.
Oh.
You use that to operate an external timer or synchronize external logic. Audio.
Oh.
And that's audio either in or out. It goes both ways. You can take audio out of there and run it through a hi-fi amplifier, and you can have the, you know, the normal sound that comes through your TV.
Yeah.
Comes out there. Or you can mix external audio in at that point, and it'll play through your TV.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So you can go both ways.
And that's...
You can go crazy, for instance. You can have your valley
Yeah.
And music or sound effects to a recording.
That's on all the time then?
Yeah.
There's no, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The drop going up. Incidentally, the pin number that way. Starting where I did a ground in the lower left-hand corner. Lower left-hand corner being where the handle is.
Yeah.
And they go around, they go to the right, and then up, and then to the left.
Yeah.
The upper row. Pin 1, pin 24. All right, pin 13 is ground. The right side of the top. Then it goes port B, 7 through 0.
Mm-hmm.
And plus 5 volts again. And the reason we did that is in case you happen to get a plug-in backwards, it won't burn anything up or hurt anything.
Oh.
Go to the wrong port.
Sure. I see. Right.
Okay, the last two lines that come out there are for synchronization to any kind of intelligent device that works at a different speed than the Z80. For instance, if you wanted to put a floppy disk on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. The leftmost pin is an I/O request line, and it goes low. It goes from 5 volts to 0 when the Z80 is accessing the I/O port, either port A or port B.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. Now, the bits would be set, it would be a protocol of some kind where the bit would be set, for instance, bit 7 or bit 6. Port B might be set to say whether you're going in or coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This would all be, a function of how you wrote your program.
Yeah.
Interpret these bits.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this signal comes out to say that the Z80 is accessing that port at this particular microsecond in time.
Yeah. When it goes down to 0.
Floppy disk, and
yeah.
The next word, the next byte has not been assembled yet off the disk.
Yeah.
The external device can lower the next line, the wait line, and that'll hold the Z80 right in that state.
Hmm.
It will lock it up right in the middle of that output instruction or input instruction until the device gets ready, and then the device lets the line go high again, and the input or output and the program. So this allows it to sync up to any kind of other device that works at a different speed.
Yeah. So now we got, yeah.
It's sort of a hand, handshaking kind of thing.
Now, yeah.
Handshaking, I think before the description of the 8154.
Yes. That's a pretty cheap thing. I mean, there isn't any
4K in there. You got a lot of programming to play with, to fill in for missing hardware. This is exactly the approach we took on this low-cost keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
All my father did is he took a keyboard full of switches and some pull-up resistors and some diodes, just a few, and hooked them onto this I/O port. An internal logic to scan the keyboard, sends a one out on each individual bit line and reads them back on the other side to see if they're set. And if they are, that means the switch is held down at that junction.
Yeah.
And he did a lookup table to interpret that to ASCII.
Ah, yeah.
And put it in the input buffer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an example of, you know, of the ways you can take something inexpensive and hook to this and use logic in the 4K memory itself to make something that appeared intelligent.
Yeah.
I made a short list here of things you, that people can anticipate doing with this.
Oh, good.
One of them, of course, is programming Z80 machine code.
Yeah.
And that would include any diagnostics that people want to come up with. I'm looking here at this list from your survey of the top five things that people want to be able
mm-hmm.
to do. And one of them was a self-diagnostic cartridge.
Yeah.
And there's no reason that diagnostics that came with those boards
Yeah.
Okay. We have access to built-in graphics and sound effect capabilities that are in the 8K built-in ROM template.
Mm-hmm.
There are those 64 services, and you sent me the documentation on it. They do everything from putting up graphics to playing music to keeping track of game scores and elapsed time and all kinds of stuff that make writing of games a whole lot easier. And we'll have access to all those.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in the process of doing, well, I had done this before, as I decoded a number of them and written them and wrote them down in terms of how somebody would want to use one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That list from the documentation you sent me. What you sent me saves me the trouble of having to decode everything.
Yeah.
I can simply take a look at what it does and figure out a use for it.
Mm-hmm.
And use it, and you can come out with a whole list of these things.
Yeah.
Incidentally, that music interpreter that you published in the last Arcadian.
Yeah. That program was to do it in BASIC, using all the BASIC functions for putting in the notes and so on. Now, Brett's been working on doing it in machine language, and he sent me a program where you do a quick routine of an assembly routine, and then you start putting in the data. I don't have the slightest idea of how he calculates the data. He sent me a listing. But I, it's incomprehensible to know how that is music, so there's a code someplace in there. But anyway, he's working on that now as the next phase.
There are programs available that do a little better than the built-in sound effects that Sally has. What they have, if you
Yeah, a little bit more.
Or a little flat.
Yeah.
A quarter note off.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there are a lot of compositions available, you know, in the general marketplace that play all sorts of exotic music, and they play multiple octaves. You know, generally they have a bass voice and an intermediate voice and a tenor voice.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, since they did not have this sound chip, is they synthesize the waveforms in software, and they come out with a little ladder, a simple little A to D converter using 16 resistors in a network off an 8-bit I/O port.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wanted to get into that, again, they can connect that resistor network to one of these two I/O ports.
Mm-hmm.
And get a little bit better music.
Mm-hmm.
This music is squared off.
So yeah. Yeah, there was an article in 73, about 2 years ago, that was talking about that kind of a thing, as I recall. Okay, neat.
Okay, another thing is low-cost add-on facilities that we can hook on to the I/O port, and I have a number of them listed here. What I would like to do, and you know, we certainly welcome anybody else who wants to do this, is try to come up with a series by cheap, I mean $5 to $10 type add-on kit.
Yeah.
You know, add a relay to their system where they can get it to turn the lights on and off.
Well, I was doing that a little while ago.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Gee, the relay was $1.50, and it turns on my 12-volt light or anything. I got a neat. It's a 5-volt. Coil that gives you up to 3 amps at 250 volt across the contact. So that's a whopper. Anyway.
Yeah, but you know, some number of things like that. One of the, have you seen the Radio Shack light pen?
No.
Okay, they have a really cheap light pen.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, there's really two kinds of light pen, two classifications of light pen. The kind that the Bally was set up to operate on is the good kind.
Mm-hmm.
That uses the timing. What happens is the photocell that looks at the squid going by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this thing scans from top to bottom, left to right.
Yeah.
And it looks at that squid going by and sees the leading edge. It interrupts the Z80. The Z80 records the row and column,
mm-hmm.
or the X and Y coordinate of where the squid was. It knows where the squid is. Putting up graphics, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 14 and 15.
Okay, that takes sophisticated electronics because you have to be able to recognize that leading edge, yet not be sensitive to things like horizontal flyback interference or ambient light or a lot of things.
Yeah, and have a fast transistor.
The only ones I've seen that are really, you know, reliable are in the $200-$300 range. There are a number of really inexpensive light pens out.
Mm-hmm.
Radio Shack is one of them, but that's a different kind of light pen. What they have there is simply a photo cell and an amplifier, no more, no less. And they don't allow you to make an entry anywhere on the screen like you can with the other kind of light pen. What they allow you to do is make a menu selection for it.
Yeah.
What they do is they take a little white box and flash it around on its own possibility.
Yeah.
And every time they light the box up, they read the photo cell.
Okay.
You know, it's a much lower
speed
operation. And you can get by with almost no hardware from that.
Yeah.
Next time. And you know, that's certainly somebody can hook up for $5.
Yeah, okay.
Sort of included in your game or whatever you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
They work pretty well.
Yeah, fairly gross thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, if you want to limit the input to a set of choices,
yeah.
It works very well. software to go with it. A printer mechanism. There are a number of low-cost printer mechanisms out. And this is just the paper advance and the print head. And it has...